The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you ever wish you could ask your data anything at any time? How are sales this quarter? How is a specific marketing campaign performing? How is the overall health of the business? With Domo's AI and data products platform, you can. Domo lets your team channel AI and data quickly, securely, and innovatively to deliver measurable insights wherever and whenever you need them. Anyone on your team can use Domo to prepare, analyze, visualize, automate, and distribute data amplified by AI. Domo goes beyond productivity. It's designed to transform your processes and drive real growth, powered by trust, flexibility, and years of expertise in data and AI innovation. Data is hard. Domo is easy. Learn how Domo can help you make smarter moves faster at ai.domo.com. That's ai.domo.com.
Greetings, travelers!
Who's that voice? Who's that voice in there?
It's an extra voice from beyond.
So Mark, you're feeling okay today?
I'm doing good today, so I am here to assist on this one. Hopefully I'm feeling good on more days and I can do more of these recorded ones.
Yes, well, we're glad to have you. We're glad you're feeling up to being with us today. So, and I'm sure the fans are going to go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But I wanted to bring up something because to me, this was really, really interesting. So we were sharing, and we're going to put it in the show notes so everybody can see it. There's this video from this lady in the UK.
And what is happening? We have breaking news.
Okay, I don't think that was really breaking news, but I feel like you were desperate to use the breaking news.
Yeah, I really
missed it so much. I've missed it.
This is kind of an older story. This video came out a year or two ago, but we found it again.
Okay, that's fine. Mark got his breaking news.
Indulge me.
We'll humor him because he's, you know, crazy. But here is my thing on this video. So if you look at this video, right, it was a woman's mother had passed away, right? And so she was there cleaning out the flat. They call it a flat. And she leaves for the night, locks the door. They do have a camera watching that door, probably for security purposes, but she's the only one with a key. She arrives the next day, and there's a bag that was upstairs in the bedroom, now suddenly downstairs, right? Mm-hmm. And she asks her daughter to go back through the video to see what happened. She didn't understand. She's the only one with a key. How the hell did this bag get there? So the daughter goes back through the video and there's no event. It's like a Ring camera. There's no like event or motion detected, but from one frame to another, and they show this, it goes no bag and the bag suddenly appears. Right.
And yeah, like phases into existence. Yes. In a matter of one frame. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just from scrolling through the recording, because, you know, in case you're wondering, everyone, if you've got cameras in your living room, they're recording all the time. It doesn't matter what your settings are.
They're listening to you. Yeah.
So what I thought was fascinating, because I was thinking about this in relation to Mark's ghost that drops the books at the door, right? Because remember, we were trying, just so you know, travelers, we have been trying with a Ring camera that I gave Mark and Gary to try to get this on video, like pointed at the hallway, exactly where they drop them off, in front of the door to Carrie's office, which is where they get dropped, the bathroom, which is where they get dropped, Mark's office, where some of them are pulled from, and then behind this camera is the living room, where some of them are pulled from too, and then they appear in this hallway, but they appeared, but we never managed to get anything on camera.
No movement. Ever. It's literally just like that, where it's just suddenly, boom, it's there.
And I think this is fascinating to me because it makes me kind of wonder if the spirit realm, we say the words, the spirit realm and the veil, like if it's almost like a separate, I'm going to use the word dimension than we're in, and that the interaction some of these things have is going into and coming out of this other place, because it kind of makes sense that I think that if something wanted to leave something, it's just going to go to wherever it wants to do and kind of pull it out of its dimension pocket and drop it off again, right? Yeah. Because the other thing that's interesting is when they take the books off the shelf, sometimes on your bookshelf, right, it's two or three layers in of books, but the rest of the books are not moved, altered, just it's moved from that one space. So I kind of go, is it able to grab it, kind of suck it into wherever it is, or, you know, whatever, go back to its dimension and then come back out and not like a hand, but make it located. So this is a really weird thing. And I'd love to know what our travelers think of this entire idea that, you know, when you look and something's suddenly just gone, or you see a shadow figure move, but then it's not there anymore. You go, well, it didn't go into the wall, right? It had to have gone somewhere else. They have to be somewhere else. So I don't know what your guys
are. Or you think it goes through the wall, but it doesn't actually, it's going into this other dimension and it just appears like it's going through the wall.
Exactly.
And that's why we see it that way.
It's in front of you and then it's gone. Like how many stories have we heard where we see it? And then of course it always makes me think of the Supernatural episode where, you know, the boy's uncle basically dies and he tries to get to them, but you find out it's like a shit ton of work for the ghosts to go through the spirit realm and do what they're doing. Yeah. Like it's anyway. So,
oh, I've seen that episode. That's a really early one.
Anyway, what are you guys' thoughts? Because
well, I go back to even Star Trek's done this a couple times. There was that one Next Generation episode where they got phased out of existence and they were slightly off kilter and they had to basically be ghosts that episode. It was
that's a good episode.
Yeah, there's
we should link that in the show notes.
Yeah, I can do that. But it's definitely, like I said, I think these things, they're picking them up. They're putting them in their pocket. They walk into the other room and then something in that hallway stops them from carrying it through wherever they're going. And that's why the books just appear in the hallway. And that's why the bag just appeared in that hallway. Something with thresholds or something.
Yeah. You know, you say that, but I have another theory. Okay, you know me. I'm theorying out every which way.
Oh, but man, yeah.
You know, I love theories.
That's a weird way to word it.
But out. Every which way. No, my theory though is this. I kind of wonder in your situation, because the wife of the gentleman that used to live in that house's office was there. I don't know if he's not bringing her presents.
I think he's saying, look at this cool thing. And then, you know, and he's bringing it to her and then realizing she's not there. So he drops it.
But he took your water cup out of that office and moved it to a closet where the door was shut.
That was an odd experience. I don't know if we've talked about that, but
Fucking with you.
I went in to help Carrie with her new computer, get it set up and all this. And I brought my water bottle and put it down again, not in the best of health. So doing what I can. And then at one point I went back to my room and went to bed. And suddenly I was like, wait a minute, I had to grab another water bottle. And I'm like, where's my main water bottle? We looked for it for like hours. Couldn't find it anywhere. I'm like, maybe in my addled state of the epilepsy, sometimes I forget things and can't find where things are and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, it could be this, it could be that. I could have left it anywhere, but our house isn't that big. And there's not that many places I would have put it down on a shelf or something. And then suddenly it's in the closet in here, which I only go in when we're going on an event or something like that to get Robert. That's where Mini Robert lives. And it was in there sitting on a counter. So,
and what I think is interesting is I feel like it went, no, this is not your office.
Yes.
Yeah. This is not your space.
He's cleaning up after you.
He took it out. He took it away. Who knows? That's a whole other episode. Sorry, gang. We're 8 minutes in. We haven't even talked about our topic.
No, it's fine. But I just wanted to bring this up because I want to know traveler thoughts on it because it was weird. But okay, what the heck are we talking about today?
So today we are talking about a weird sighting that occurred in 1973 in the Isle of Wight.
That's the year I was born.
Oh,
maybe it was Erica.
It might have been
now,
me.
Now we know. Now we know the origin of Erica. So this.
No, Mark, that's a whole other episode. We both.
All right.
But when you say the Isle of Wight, is that in the UK? Where is the Isle?
Yes, it is in the UK. Mark and I were talking about it earlier, and he explained it a little as the island in Wicker Man.
Oh, it's
like that. It's a little off the coast of London. So it's okay.
It's like its own nice little place. Thing.
Yeah, you ferry over to it or you fly over to it, and there's no real easy way on and off the island other than
that. A lot of people holiday there for like their summers and stuff.
Got it. Okay. So talk to me. What are we doing with this? What is all right. happening?
It is Tuesday at approximately 4 p.m. on October 1973.
Okay, I was already born. That's fine. This wasn't me. Continue on.
And there's two children. There's Faye, who's 7, and an unnamed boy who I believe is 8. They just say they're the same age. They're playing outside when they hear a wailing noise that sounds kind of like an ambulance siren. And kids being kids, they act in a totally inappropriate way, and they follow the noise.
You know, I've known to be dumb as well, so that's fine.
Yeah,
you gotta remember this is before Satanic Panic.
Yeah,
before even serial killers are known to be a thing. Before anything.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Like when people left their doors open and
Stranger
stuff.
Danger
yeah.
was not a thing yet. This was this early 70s. You know, it's
yeah.
It's not like now where we'd be like, I'm gonna mind my business. Like,
stay home and play on your iPad. No, this
it's
is
not only that. It's also not a time in the internet where you go look up what is that. You're like, that's a weird noise. Let's go see what that is.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. I like it.
And there are
like
two kids hanging in. Outside, of course, they're going to go look for an adventure. That's fun.
Yep.
All right. So good. The sound led them through there's a golf course on the Isle of Wight. They live in, or they're holidaying in Sandown, a little town in the Isle of Wight. So they go through a golf course and into a swampy meadow. There's a bunch of trees, but the ground is like, you know, soft and wet. And how it's been described to me is that there's the town, the golf course, like next to the town, the swampy woods, and then there's an airport, a small airport that people fly in and out of to like the mainland and over to Sandown. But at this time, it was like defunct. It was closed as far as I'm
an old
aware.
RAF airport for World War I, World War II, early Cold War. And then by this time it had been, you still used occasionally as like a regional just for little planes to land in and stuff, but it wasn't like an active airport when you think about it. Okay.
Like it wasn't manned and there was probably old military stuff still like stored there, which will come up a little bit later.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So they're crossing this little small footbridge toward the sound. And a hand appears from underneath the footbridge.
Like a troll?
Just a little. This hand comes out and it has 3 fingers and it's wearing a blue glove. And the creature, I don't know what to call it. I'm going to call it.
At this point, it's just a hand and it's and it does a motion. Like, come here.
Okay. Yeah, and it's holding a book. According to the children, the figure was fumbling with a book, dropped it in the water, and then it splashed around awkwardly to retrieve it. Like, it was very, like, uncomfortable in its body, and it was trying to, like, pick it up. Like, it was very important. And then as the children watched, the figure retreated into a small metallic hut with no windows.
Okay, and now I'll describe the figure before we go into that, because this is something.
I'm not going to describe him just yet because they don't get a good look at him.
That's true. At this point, they still haven't really.
So they mostly see the back of him at this point because he is going away from them toward the hut. Okay. And he doesn't walk so much as he bounces. Like, he jumps so purposefully that his knees nearly touch his chest. Like, it's like boing, boing, boing. Which, okay. You know, imagine a whole man doing that away from you.
That would be super weird.
And seems like the kids maybe thought that too, because they were like, oh, okay, he left. And they start wandering away.
How big but is this man supposed to be?
He is 7 feet tall.
Oh my gosh. So this isn't even like a normal sized person.
No.
Oh, blue I don't fingers. Know. No.
And he has, yeah. And blue gloves.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to have to. No, I'm out. I'm out. No. Okay.
We oh, there crazy. Are so many where you would have noped.
Yeah. It's going to get worse.
I'm sure it is. I can already feel it and I don't like it. Okay, continue.
So they wander off and it doesn't, our sources, the BFORA, and they're the British UFO Research Association. They don't say why the kids wander off. Was it that they lost interest because the figure went into its hut? Were they frightened? But later they would say they were never scared at all during this. They just kind of wandered away, as kids do.
Okay.
So the figure comes back out of the hut, and he is carrying a microphone.
Yeah.
Like he's a singer? Is he going to the voice?
He's going to do karaoke?
He's
going to
be fucked.
So despite Faye and the other boy being about 50 yards away at this point, figure puts the microphone up to its... I don't want to call it a mouth, but you'll see why. And he says, hello, are you still there? And even though the kids were like far away, it sounded as though the figure was like standing right beside them. That's how far his voice carried. He sounded friendly. And so the kids moved closer to get a better look at him. So this is our description of our friend.
Okay.
He was 7 feet tall. And his head appeared to be wedged between his shoulders like he had no neck.
Okay, so now this is between Mothman and the Grafton Monster. Continue on.
Exactly. So in my notes, I wrote like Mothman.
My notes says like Flatwoods.
Yes.
Flatwoods, I didn't feel like had the no neck. That was a metal suit, but Grafton had no neck.
And he was dressed in a yellow pointed hat with a round black knob at the top.
So okay, like now a, like I see where you said Flatwoods. Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. He wore a green tunic with a red collar, and he had two wooden antennae on his head. His facial features were all shapes. He has triangle eyes. He has a brown square nose and yellow lips that do not move.
This sounds almost like a scarecrow.
Exactly. He had a little bit of reddish hair and very, very white skin. Like,
so this is Ronald McDonald.
Very, very not off.
Yes.
The description by the children?
Yes.
Yes.
7-year-old children.
Okay. Well, and what time of day is it?
Midday? It is like about 4. All right. Well, I'm gonna send you a picture.
Of the afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to need a picture because this sounds like Ronald McDonald made up thing. Even Garrus, who's getting up and moving, is like, I can't listen to anymore.
Yeah, and apparently no shoes.
No. Bare feet. Because he had bare feet and they had 3 toes too.
That's so weird sounding.
Yeah, no, you're gonna, there, it's in the chat.
Okay. It's in their chat.
Let me look, I'm clicking. Ah! What? No! What?
Can you describe it to your thoughts of it to our listeners?
Okay. It looks like if they took the Flatwoods Monster, put pants that apparently didn't fit it and had tassels at the bottom.
Yep.
And then put on when you were in school, I don't know if they still do this, but they would take paper plates and have you make a mask on a paper plate.
Yeah.
Very good.
That's exactly what this looks like to me.
Very, very good. I think it looks like a paper mache clown.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
And I also said he kind of looked like Blobby from, if you ever watched like kids television in the UK.
Mr. Blobby.
Yeah.
Which we'll have to introduce Erica to at some point. So.
Oh my God. We're going to send her
Mr. Blobby is a nightmare fuel for many children.
Oh my God. So when you do watch the clip of Mr. Blobby, I want you to hear his voice when we do Sam's dialogue.
Sam does talk. Yeah.
He does talk. But first he pulls notebook. Out his notebook. Yeah.
His wet notebook.
Yes. And he writes in it. And he writes, "Hello, and I am all colors, Sam."
Okay.
Which, you know.
But he doesn't say it. He points to the words. And apparently they're written out of order. The description's very tricky on this. It says, "Hello, I am all colors, Sam." But the children mention the words were written in the wrong order, and he had to point to the words in the order he wanted them to read it.
He had Faye read it out loud.
Yeah, Faye is her pseudonym, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when he does speak to them, he speaks into the microphone, but his mouth does not move at all, which kind of goes with your paper plate thing about, like, that's like a mask. It's not his face.
Yeah.
So he asked the kids about themselves for about 30 minutes, and then they start asking him questions.
I'm proud of these kids because I would be the F out of there. This would be too weird for me.
Yeah. It's strange that they stayed, but I wonder if because they were not scared, he was like exuding some sort of like something to make them stay, you know, like some chemicals or something that made them feel at ease.
I don't think that's always the case, because as kids, like even when I was a kid, I had the whole ghost thing, which we've talked about sometimes on this show, and empathy, whatever we want to call it. So I had some experiences where they were a little scary, but there were a lot of weird things in watching horror movies and stuff where I didn't have that level of fear. It was more excitement from it. I think there's a chance, and especially in a time where you're not told things, you kind of look at it and go, he kind of looks like a clown. Like, he's not got bangs. That's exactly. Or, you know, like, he's not, even the picture that they drew, I go, you know, it's creepy to us. And now we have a whole, like, Slender Man, creepy boss, get the F away from me. But back then, I could see kids not thinking it was necessarily scary.
Halloween costumes of that era, where we had the little plastic masks welded to our face and the stupid little jumpsuits. That's exactly what this reminds me of, is that this would have been whimsical, you know, and stuff like that. Remember, this is Bozo the Clown era in the US. In the UK, they only have 3 television channels. At this point, I think they still only had 2. You know, limited amount of things for kids to watch and be entertained by and all that. So this is...
Yeah, and a lot of stuff.
Like, wow, this is cool.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff at that time that was kids' television too was like, now we would be like, that's a nightmare fuel thing. Like, it was, a lot of clowns and that sort of thing.
And to be fair, Doctor Who had appeared a few years before this, about 10 years. It had been going on for about 10 years at this point. And, you know, that was the science fiction show for kids.
Yeah.
With weird looking monsters that were generally nice. You
know. Yeah, I was going to say, I remember growing up with like Sesame Street, and like if you look at the McDonald's characters back in the 70s, and they're not the cute, like warm and fuzzy, like no offense, but Ronald McDonald looked like he would, you know, be assault you. Like that's
I mean, the Muppet monsters used to eat each other. Come on.
You know, yeah. So okay. Weird. Let's keep going.
All right, so this is their conversation they have with him.
In his house now. He's taking them to his hut.
Yeah, so they are in his hut. And to go into it, they had to crawl. Like, it was like a little door, and they had to crawl through.
Oh,
it was 2 levels. And there was, like, wooden furniture in it, like really simple wooden furniture. It made me think of, like, a dorm room, you know?
Okay.
Like,
or a hobbit
and
hole.
Then, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was green wallpaper on the walls of the first level. And on the wallpaper, there are a bunch of dials, which I always thought was like a crazy sci-fi show kind of vibe. Like, it made me think of Flash Gordon.
How do we not think this is just some tall, normal human being fucking weird? Like,
it's a theory. So we'll get to the theories in the second half here. So.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Because there's all more right, to the story.
So weird wallpaper, got it. Hut in the middle of nowhere. Talking weirdly, got it. Okay.
All right, so this is how their conversation goes. They go, why are your clothes ripped? And he says that he only has the one pair. And then they're like, are you a man? And he laughs a little and he says, no. They say, are you a ghost? And he says, well, not really, but I am in an odd sort of way. And they said, what are you then? And he says, you know. And he tells them that he has no name. There are others like him. And he was frightened of like humans because he could not fight back. Sam told the children that he lived off of berries and would drink a little bit of water from the river nearby.
After he cleaned it.
He would clean them in the water like he was a little raccoon. He seemed a little more comfortable with the kids at this point. So he took off his hat, revealing that he had like round ears and a bit more hair. And then this is the most bizarre part. He decided he was going to show the kids a magic trick. So he took one of his little berries. He put it in his ear. He kind of moved his head in like an odd sort of way, like a forward back motion. It reappeared in his eye. And remember, he has like a triangle eye. And then he does the motion again and it appears in his yellow mouth.
Oh, that's weird.
And then
And then he eats it.
Oh, no. I'm not. Not on board with that. Absolutely not.
And this kind of goes with the theory that what his face looks like is a mask. And he was putting the berry in through like the entrance into his mask. It appears in the eye hole of the mask. And then it goes into his mouth and then he can eat it. And there was some speculation that that was a way he cleaned it too.
It was gross. No.
I found some references online to him offering the kids berries and them eating them, but this was not in the Bufora text. So
yeah, not it's, in the original description. Yeah. That was added later.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so who knows if it happened. I'm not a fan
of any of the things you've just said, just by the way.
So the children speak to Sam for about a half an hour and then they leave. The first person they see, they say, oh, we saw a ghost. And the person was like, huh, yeah, you saw a ghost. Cool, cool, cool. I believe they were like workers working at the golf course doing like a construction thing. And they did not see a hut at all.
Oh.
Like it was never there.
Yeah, like they were working on something, didn't see what or anything.
That is weird.
Later, weeks later, Faye tells her father about the encounter.
Finally gets up the courage.
Yeah, because the first person they told was like, huh, yeah, whatever. Didn't believe them. So she waits to tell him. And when she does tell him, he suggests to her that she made it up. But when he suggests that, she gets really, really upset. And it kind of makes him, you know, a little taken aback and he takes it more seriously. And the boy, when he was asked by Faye's father, he shared the same account, but was less willing to talk about it than Faye was.
But their details were 100% matching.
Yeah, there was a bunch of like corroboration between them on this story.
I kind of understand that, I guess. You know, I can understand the temptation because it is kind of weird and you also don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, they did go into a stranger's house and potentially stranger berries and stranger danger. I could be like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I wasn't alive in the 70s. Like, I was soon to be alive. But was it more common in that period of time to go into a stranger's house because you had less fear?
I'm going to give my view because I grew up in Hollywood, California, right?
Yeah.
We had a little bit of warnings and stuff because there was some danger out there. But when we moved to Glendale, which is, you know, a bigger city now and stuff, but keep in mind, this is in the late 70s, early 80s. We got on our bikes. Mine was a Huffy. It was red. It was pretty tricked out, actually. I was kind of impressed with myself. And we'd leave right after school, which a lot of times our parents weren't home when we got home from school. And there was no cell phones or anything like that. And sometimes you'd call them at work. Sometimes they, you know, sometimes parents would be like, can you call me as soon as you get home? But a lot of times, no, grab your Huffy bike, go out. And the rule was you had to come home when the street lights came on, right? Because that was usually an indicator. It was around dinner time, go home. But we would go all over the place. We'd be in construction sites. And especially with the bicycle, we'd be miles and miles away from our homes. And then don't even get me started on Saturdays and Sundays, because you'd get up, throw cereal in, sometimes watch Saturday morning cartoons, sometimes stay around for the horror movies right after Saturday morning cartoons. Me and Mark have talked about that. And then you were off and you were gone until whatever. And maybe you were doing a sleepover, and the sleepover might be because you called your parents and were like, hey, I'm going to stay at Jody's house.
Yeah. And who's Jody? Oh, they don't care. Is the giant pig-headed monster that I met, and he's a best friend of mine now. But yeah, that's the sort of thing. Yeah, it was the 70s and in UK, and this is Isle of Wight, so it's not like a huge place. There's lots of places to go. We should take a quick break before we get into the rest of this.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you ever wish you could ask your data anything at any time? How are sales this quarter? How is a specific marketing campaign performing? How is the overall health of the business? With Domo's AI and data products platform, you can. Domo lets your team channel AI and data quickly, securely, and innovatively to deliver measurable insights wherever and whenever you need them. Anyone on your team can use Domo to prepare, analyze, visualize, automate, and distribute data amplified by AI. Domo goes beyond productivity. It's designed to transform your processes and drive real growth, powered by trust, flexibility, and years of expertise in data and AI innovation. Data is hard. Domo is easy. Learn how Domo can help you make smarter moves faster at ai.domo.com. That's ai.domo.com.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Erie Travels producer Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/bow_lake.
Okay, we're back. So now that Bo has learned what terrible parents mean, Mark, no, just kidding. I don't think we were terrible parents, but I think, you know,
It was a different
time. It sounds like the vibes were different.
It was interesting because I lived in California and this is a different show. Me and Bo should go down the rabbit hole, but there were so many active serial killers
in the 70s
California during that time period and stuff. But you know, the news was the nightly news. There wasn't an internet. There wasn't all that. And I think it was still likened back to a time where it was more wholesome and people would hitchhike and like all this stuff. Like you would never in a million years, the level of hitchhiking that happened in the 50s and 60s and even into the 70s, you would never see that these days. But even back then, people would pick up hitchhikers. Like now I don't know about you guys, but I don't pick up hitchhikers. Like no way, right?
Well, now it's illegal to pick up hitchhikers. Yeah.
My point is back then it was such a common thing, especially for younger people to get around that way, you know, that anyway, it's okay.
Well, completely different world.
All right. So Erica, knowing what you know about, we're going to call him Sam, even though he says he has no name, just to make it easier. What do you think, knowing what you know at this point, what do you think Sam is?
Faye.
That is
because of the berries.
And Faye is that I feel like his appearance does not really coincide with a lot of what other people, because even to me, the Flatwoods Monster, and I'm not going down this rabbit hole too far, I look at it as people talk a lot about the grays, they talk about the reptiles. You know, like there's some particular races of aliens that people said they've seen a lot of. And to me, Flatwoods falls in the reptilian one. That's how far I'm going down that rabbit hole. Based on some of the other stuff we've talked about. This, to me, seems more like appearing to be something that the children could accept. Which, when that happens, that screams Faye to me. Because Faye, I feel like, when they do make appearances, either do it to create an effect like the fear mongers and stuff like that, or they do it because they're being playful. I don't think they're always little, you know, butterflies or little dwarf looking things or gnome looking things. I think they can appear to be whatever they want to appear to be for whomever they're in front of. That is why I say that.
Yeah. So they were trying to look like a clown or a marionette puppet with the weird jumping legs.
Yeah, like a toy.
They know kids have context about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you saw a doll, you know what I mean, and you didn't see it move a lot or just saw somebody carrying it, you would go, okay, that's how it operates versus really truly knowing how it operates.
And that would explain the house being kind of almost like a dollhouse.
And having like a kid's fort kind of vibe with the crawling through the door. Sort of thing. Like I know it's when I was a kid, I desperately wanted a really cool fort. And the idea of a fort with like two levels, cool stuff on the walls to fool with, and also having a doll that could talk and also was taller than me sounded like the coolest thing ever. Like kid me would be like, I'll go with you. Yeah, you're so awesome.
Growing up in the back hills of West Virginia, we built a two-story treehouse in the middle of nowhere. We didn't have dolls, but we had whoever's dad had the least guarded Playboys stockpiled. But you know, that was
but I mean, to me, I look and that's why I say that. I feel like this isn't alien because I feel like the approach is different, and I get why they would be afraid of man and things like that based on lots of other Faye stuff. But what are the other theories? Because I'm assuming alien and I'm assuming Faye.
We'll go into the other theories, but first we need to look at the story in a wider context.
Yeah, we need to talk about Mr. Y.
So Mr. Y is Faye's father. And he had his own experiences in the 2 years preceding Faye's encounter with Sam. He states that he never, ever, ever, ever told Faye about any of these things. So on October 10th, 1970, which is 2 years before, Faye's father was driving to visit a friend. While passing through the village of Bradling, which is another village on the Isle of Wight, he spotted an enormous aircraft in the sky. It flew really low, and he observed that there were seven spherical red lights, like, around it. And he described them as cherries, like they were like their own thing, almost separate from the aircraft. They were just attached to it.
Like dangling red Christmas bulbs.
Kind of, but I don't know if they're dangling so much as like on the border of it. It
around it, almost like an invisible. Okay.
There were also other lights between all the seven red lights. There were like turquoise and white lights. Like, you know, like a regular aircraft would have, how it has lights, you know, on it. So we can kind of tell what kind of aircraft it is. So he stops driving to look at this thing. And then he starts driving again. And the UAP drove kind of parallel to him, seeming to like keep pace. But as they were both going, it seemed to get smaller. So the seven red lights became four red lights. Like it shrunk.
Well, this is very specific. So it's going along the side of his car?
Yeah. Following him along the road, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he puts on his blinker and stops, you know, to turn. And the UAP just waits. Like it just hovers there. Being like, all right, where are we going now?
How is this guy not freaking out?
But this kind of leads into what we've said before. Why is Faye not freaking out? I think that sometimes you see something so unusual that your brain is just like, return to normal operating procedure. Like, you were going to visit your friend. Go visit your friend. You can't comprehend this thing that's following you. Do what you're supposed to do. So he's just like, you know what? I'm going to keep going. So he finally gets to his friend's house. And what's important to note is his friend also corroborates this because he could see the lights kind of playing hide and seek with them behind the trees near his house.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it seemingly disappears. Like, he doesn't talk about what happens after this point. So I'm assuming the lights just fade away and they continue their night. So then in March of 1972, March 1st, he was sitting on the cliffside overlooking the ocean. Why? Before it kind of made it seem like he was drawn there.
Yeah, he said it was like an unexpected tidal surge and he kind of had to go this way whether he wanted to or not.
Would that mean that the road was flooded and he had to wait?
Yeah, and then he just kind of wanders this way. Remember, there's not many cars on Isle of Wight. So he's walking.
It's just hard because they aren't the most clear.
These are stories from one article, basically, in Buforia magazine.
Okay. And they're not long stories.
They're like a paragraph at most.
So he's just driving along, looks over, sees this weird spacecraft driving next to him, and is like, cool, that's cool. I'm going to stop. I'm going to just turn here. I'm good. I'm fine.
Now this is later, a year later, he's out on a cliff. And he sees something unusual here.
So he's looking over the ocean and he sees a craft underwater. And is that called a USO?
A USO, Mark? Yeah. But now there are other things, underwater anomalies, but yeah.
Okay.
Unidentified submerged object.
So he sees two yellow lights on it. And his quote is that it was peering up at me like the eyes of some horrible sea monster. How I see it is he could see a dark shape in the water and then these two lights on the shape.
So he does go back to his car at this point and drive home after he observes it for a little while because he's done. He's like, that's it, I'm out. He noped out for you, Eric.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
And it does seem like the lights disappeared before he was like, gotta go. It's kind of the same as the other encounter in that when the lights are gone, he can nope out.
But that's his encounters previous. He swears he never told anybody until this interview, you know, for Buforia. Yeah, he has a theory about his daughter's experience.
Okay.
She got taken into some sort of alien, otherworldly bubble.
Yeah, like an interdimensional bubble that she and the boy slides into. And that's why the workers never saw the hut, because they didn't even see the kids probably at this point, because they could slip like into this dimension.
Okay, so can I ask a quick question here? Is he the only one that reports this UAP?
The kids and him. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a one-off.
But they didn't see the UAP, right? They didn't
The previous 2 year things, he's the only one, and he didn't report them until he's talking about Sam to the Buforia.
So there are a couple theories. Jacques Vallée, which is one of the big voices in like alien encounters and those sort of things, he states that a lot of the reports of alien encounters and UAP sightings are absurd. Like, there's absurd behavior by the aliens and ludicrous looking craft. And his quote is, "This absurd behavior has had the effect of keeping professional scientists away from the area where that activity was taking place. It has also served to give the saucer myth its religious and mystical overtones." The vibe is that they try to be weird on purpose, because then they're not going to get looked at too hard by anyone of note, like science or
okay,
that sort of thing. And then if it looks religious and mystical, it further goes like, oh, this is like a religious delusion or something like that. That's just Jacques Vallée's theory on it. But I figured it was important to note it because he's one of the important guys.
I don't disagree, but okay, continue.
Yeah. So
emotion. Last page of emotion on all of this, but continue.
Sam looking how he does, I kind of was like, okay, that sounds frightening to me. Like, if I saw this thing with that looks like a clown, to be fair, I'm primed to think clowns are scary because of like things like It. And a lot of people do think clowns are scary just because of
people had that fear for centuries. It just it wasn't commonly known until Stephen King.
Isn't it like because they have the, like this elongated mouth and
fear of the painted smile? I can't remember the exact term for it, but I always thought the English translation was worse, the fear of the painted smile. That's where we get the fear of the Joker.
I think it's like also like an uncanny valley thing. Like, it looks like a person, but it also doesn't look like a person. And that pings something in our bodies that frightens us, which is why like AI stuff freaks us out.
Now, I have a theory.
Okay.
I got a theory. I think it could have been something along the lines of our dear friend, Mr. Cold. Mr. Indrid Cold, where this is something trying to communicate. And it took a form of something that the children would not be afraid of and trying to talk to them. A traveler of some sort.
Yeah.
That's
because he asked them questions, you know, like.
We don't know what he asked them because we don't have their side. We just have this one account. We don't know all that. They say they talked for a half hour. What did they talk about? It's nowhere. And these kids were given false names. Because they were kids. The family name is unknown because the dad wanted to stay anonymous. So that's one of the other weird things about this is, well, if they wanted fame or something like that.
Yeah, they would have put money in.
What was the point of coming out with all this information? So I tend to lean on the fact that this is something like Indrid, where it's just something we don't understand, something from an alternate dimension. I don't think it's from another world, but another world in another way, maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense to me. I just, what I meant is like, because I don't know if it's another world or this world and just another space, another thing, like it's preternatural, but it definitely, like the adding the, you know, the spaceship into it definitely changes things up. But I always think it's interesting when, so then what happens? So, okay, this kid, so the dad has these experiences. The kid has these experiences. Then anything happen after that?
No.
Nope.
That's it. As far as we know. As far as we know. Because it was never reported again. Never seen again. Never talked about again. The Isle of Man, I have to say, has some interesting history a lot of UFO sightings, a lot of unusual things there. One of my favorite incidents in history, which we will probably have to do an episode on, the Hungarian parapsychologist in the 1930s investigated the talking mongoose named Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. I love Jeff.
It was amazing. And it got made into an amazing movie with Simon Pegg recently. That's on this same island. Just 30 years before this.
And what's really interesting to me about these islands and stuff, though, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past, is there is a lot more fae mythology associated to this area of the world than almost anywhere else. I'm not saying there aren't other different things, but a lot of, like, if you look at the Native American, or, you know, the people that were here before the white people showed up in their thing, theirs is a very spiritual, I'm not saying they're not fae-like, but it's a very spiritual difference, right? When they talk about those kind of things. And, you know, all over the world, they have different descriptions of it, but I feel like this area has just such a gigantic something fae-like concentrate, because to this day, people still talk about their encounters with the fae on the island and what
you're shapeshifters and things that don't make sense. And that's 100%. That's why I'm like, okay, yeah, this sounds like one of the, it's like the Vegetable Man story we talk about, where it's a one-off and the guy admitted he was high. This is something along those lines, but the fact that the two kids matched the stories.
Yeah. And they were talked to separately, that it seemed like it weeks later,
and they're still able to keep their story together. If I'm seven and I made up a lie, an hour later I couldn't remember what the hell I had said and screwed it up. You know, there's no way I'd have been able to get away with that for weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what that gives it the credence, less credence to the story of the children making it up or being instructed to make it up. Lots of people assume that Mr. Y pushed them to make up this story. But there's also an interesting point that I saw from a Reddit thread, because I was like, I need to know more about what people think this was. And someone said that with TV media at the time, he sounds a lot like the Tin Man in terms of like shape.
Closer to the book version of Wizard of Oz,
yeah,
not the movie version.
Yeah, because it kind of looks like the Tin Man and the Scarecrow, like, squished together.
Had a baby.
And also the phrase "All Color Sam" sounds a lot like Alakazam.
Yes.
Like magic.
Oh, yeah.
And he did use the British spelling. That's telling.
Oh, you. And so there's one last theory before we close this out. And it's not a pleasant theory. It's basically the worst theory.
Yeah.
So if he's not a ghost, he's not an interdimensional being, and he's not an alien, there is something more sinister he could have been. And Erica, you kind of talked about this earlier, that he was a child predator they happened across.
That's possible. The only reason I kind of go, maybe not, is it doesn't sound like either one of them was touched inappropriately.
Nope.
And usually a child predator, especially one that does something like that, you would get more than one report of that.
But with us only having a tiny, tiny bit of their conversation and them being there for at least a half an hour, you're kind of like, okay, what happened during the rest of the time? Did the children leave it out and not tell Mr. Y? Did something happen they don't remember?
It's possible. It's just, I feel like a lot of times when predators do stuff, and I don't want to go down a path here. I'm not saying it can't happen in a short period of time, but usually there is a longer period lead up. And if it was a violent snatch and grab, they usually don't let them go. I mean, I hate to go really dark like that, but if you look at me and you watch a ton of true crime, but if it's a snatch and grab and not a grooming situation where they're working on don't tell your parents, like a half an hour is not enough time with two children to do that.
You would try for one, not for two also, because then there's more variables.
Yeah, exactly.
So that theory is kind of, I'm kind of like, I mean, if you're going to go quote unquote realistic with that, that's more likely. Yeah. But, you know, this is Eerie Travels. We're going to go eerie on this. And so I'm not sure what I think. It being interdimensional and an alien makes the most sense, since the kids seemingly disappeared and the other people don't see the hut. And it just acts really strange. And again,
this goes back to us with Preternatural, where some people see and some people don't. And it could just be simple as that some people are not tuned in to be able to see
and
it.
Kids often see things that adults don't see because we're at the point where we're good at avoiding things and quote unquote not noticing things if it goes against our worldview.
Yeah.
But a kid is more open and would be like, oh, you know, I had this experience. An adult would be like, that didn't happen to me. I did not see that. That's weird. I don't want to be seen as weird. I didn't see that. People will think I'm crazy if I said I saw that. So there's one more little tidbit before we are done with our friend Sam.
I'm going to discount the pedophile Sam. I feel like it's
I don't think that one. Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't want to leave it out because, you know, it's come up.
I mean, it is.
The one last fact about our friend Sam is that if you visit the Isle of Wight now, there is a full-size sculpture of him that you can go see and visit. Yeah. So there's your Eerie Travel.
They finally embraced it.
Yes.
They saw the Mothman Festival and said, hey, we want some of that.
Yeah. We want a little of that. And that is the story of All Colors Sam.
Yeah. And
who is also known as the Stand Down Clown. I was leaving that out on purpose because I didn't want to make you think clown too early.
No, I, you know, this has been it's weird. This is a weird one to me, like the whole thing, you know?
It was the
70s. That's why I like it.
And an odd duck. And that's why I love this one too. I'm not a big fan of the one-offs because I want to have multiple encounters, multiple.
Yeah, evidence, more evidence. Yeah.
But this one, there was enough, two people saw it.
Yeah.
They were kids, so that kind of pushes it off my radar 100%, but it's not completely off there because they did verify it. They did, you know, verify each other.
And the father's experience, there was a verified friend who also saw the same thing.
Yep. So that one.
Then that's four people who have seen something weird during
this. And that area, like I said, has an odd bunch of odd stuff. And we will have to do an episode on Nandor Fodor just because he's one of my heroes. He was able to debunk a poltergeist one time he told him, fire your maid. She's the problem. And sure enough, since they fired her, the knocking stopped and all that. but then he's like, hey, and the talking mongoose. Yeah. I can't debunk that. So
no, it is my favorite. Weird. I would love if we have any UK listeners out there that know anything about this story or grew up with any part of it. And share anything they know, because this is a weird one that I had never heard of before. This is bizarre. It's very, very interesting, but very, very weird.
Yeah. And there are things like this all over. We're going to be getting to all of them eventually. That's what the whole point of Eerie Travels is for, gang.
Yes. And we had Mark back.
Yeah.
Which means Mark has to close out the episode because we've all missed his episode closures.
Oh, I think you guys have been doing fine with him. But no, thank you again, listeners, for going with us on this strange adventure to the Isle of Wight. Thank you, Bo, for doing all the heavy lifting and the research and all that. This was a story that I had kind of put into the back of my head and everything and forgotten about. And man, it's crazy. It's just the right kind of crazy. I love high strangeness, and this fits that description so well. Again, thank you guys for doing everything you've done for the show for the last little while I've been away. Hopefully I can be back a little more, but who knows? We'll see how it goes. But thanks for having me on this one.
Absolutely. And with that, Mark, I'm going to need you to take us out this time.
All right, travelers. Well, when you're traveling along the Isle of Wight and you're looking for that talking mongoose, and you see a three-fingered hand reach out from under a bridge and motion you over, you know, go ahead and head over. And when he picks up the mic, you just pick up that mic right ahead and drop a nice beat with him and let him tell his story. And we'll see you on the other side.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2-liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.